When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that swears our given name is actually Mike Podrick Microphone, it's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop, available in your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Because patrons get perks.
Patrons get those early podcast perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he just wants you to admit he's been shot. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
So many times. Ahoy!
And she thinks your job as a neurosurgeon is the funniest thing she's ever heard. It's Allison Jennifer McKelly!
Oh, almost.
I'm making an effort to get everybody's name wrong today. Okay. So I'm just so we know what's going on. Yeah. And he told you Choi was a viable candidate. It's Jean Pauli.
Wow. Ooh, great to be here. Thank you.
I mean, John Paula, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Welcome to the sick and tired edition of Sif Pop.
I'm fine.
Ormsby's like, I'm good. Everybody else is dealing with stuff, but we are here for you to chat about some fun stuff.
We've got under the weather, but over the moon to talk movies.
Aww. Love it. Love it. Put it on a t-shirt.
That's stupid. Don't repeat it.
Full of drugs and full of hope. Legal ones, of course.
Wow. What are we, a t-shirt company now? Why are we printing these things? We are going to talk about It Ends With Us, a surprise hit at the theaters that might impact something we'll talk about next week, but not this week with the Summer Sum Game coming up. The results next week. So we'll talk about that. We figured we'd get it on the list. And then The Instigators, Matt Damon, Casey Affleck movie that came out on Apple TV Plus. We will check out that as well. We're going to be doing best ever Casey Affleck movies. We're going to be making our list of that. And then, of course, we're going to do some buried treasure as well. So let's get started with that. John, why don't you kick us off? What's your buried treasure? What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually had the fun opportunity to do a little bit of freelance video podcast producing this week. And one of the interviewees that I had the pleasure of meeting over a Zoom call, over a StreamYard call, was film director Susan Seidelman, who is best known for directing The Smithereens and Desperately Seeking Susan, neither of which I had watched before. But I thought, if I'm going to meet this lady, even just in passing, just kind of getting her set up to record, I wasn't doing the interview, I should go back and watch some of her films. And the 1985 screwball comedy starring Madonna and Rosanna Arquette, Desperately Seeking Susan, really surprised me at how sort of playful and fun and zany it was. I was expecting maybe more of like a coming of age, working girl in the city kind of vibe, especially since Madonna's in it. I thought it would be more about her, but she's kind of a side character that's only in it for a little bit. And I was really impressed with it, and it was really funny. And it felt more like a feature-length sitcom with a bunch of weird characters, a hot tub salesman and Madonna and the mafia and someone who gets amnesia and wakes up thinking they're Madonna's character. And I didn't know a lot about it. I just knew it was a sort of a fashion classic from 40 years ago, and it holds up pretty well. I had a good time with it.
Nice.
So I would recommend that one.
That is Desperately Seeking Susan. Andrew, what do you got?
Oh, I have a Vigima game for everybody.
Okay.
No, it is not Black Myth Wukong. Oh, I am playing that game emphatically right now. This game is full of profanity, violence, vulgarity, lewdness, and other hedonistic acts. Ooh. And aren't all those things bad? Absolutely. And that's what makes it so fun. I am talking about the campaign for Grand Theft Auto V.
Nice.
I got a platinum trophy on that 11 years ago. But remind me why it's one of my favorite games ever made.
It really is, because I remember whenever I first played the game, it was really a fast track to get to the online edition.
Yeah, you had to sort of a sandbox. You just want to dive in and screw around. And
exactly. Yeah. So I did rush through the campaign. Didn't really get to appreciate it. Skipped all the cutscenes. I know, awful thing to do, but playing it again now, actually trying to appreciate the story, the character of Trevor has got to be one of the most psychotically twisted and demented characters I've ever encountered.
He's one of my favorite game characters ever. He's so fun.
And I absolutely love him. I really do absolutely love him. He's such fresh and unique character. The game allows you to, if you've never played, it allows you to jump around between three different characters at your own discretion. And each character has their own narrative as to what crime life means to them. As the three criminal stories kind of like get intertwined, the story really takes off in some wild and insane ways. But underlying everything, the story is really intriguing and kept me wanting to continue with the narrative, as opposed to like just jumping on some nothing side quest that would just be explosions and boobs, you know. And that's fine. If you want a game that's just that, that's here.
I'd rather not hear those two words in the same sentence, personally, but that just freaked me out a little bit. But continue on.
Well, you got to play the campaign then.
I've never been a plastic surgeon. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
When GTA 5 came out.
To fill too much of saline and you'll be fine.
That's right. Keep the saline levels appropriate and everything will be okay.
Yeah, when this came out, hard to believe, 11 years ago now, September of 2013, that three protagonist, that three-hander style story was such a novelty for video games. And I think it still is. I don't know that there's a lot of games that let you switch completely different narratives and tracks and locations and playable styles. And I guess you could call them special abilities, for lack of a better. I forget what they call them in the game, but they're, you know, their special trick move they can all do. And it was such a neat thing at the time. Because everyone was thinking, well, they're going to change the location. They're going to make it bigger. But how do they make it different? And in the campaign, it was like, well, what if we have three different people and you just jump between them and they occasionally intersect? But it was such a cool experience playing that story so many years ago.
I didn't know this whenever the first time I played through the campaign, but you just reminded me about something that happened because of what you just said about running into these characters. You can actually run into the actual characters as you're driving around.
Yeah, as the other ones. Right, which is a really cool idea that, like, when you're not playing them, they're still living their life, kind of doing what you set them up as, which is, again, kind of a really neat concept that the game kind of plays itself in a way, or at least the characters kind of have lives when you're not there. Mm-hmm. And every time you switch back to them, you're interrupting. They're in the middle of robbing a bank or in the middle of running down the street naked with their, you know, a shotgun in their hands. It's like, okay, what have I gotten myself into? And now I have to kind of unstick myself from this situation. It made the game a lot of fun and certainly very funny.
Every single time you switch back to Trevor, he's always either naked or in a dress on the top of Mount Chiliad. And you're like, oh, great. I got to find my way all the way back down to Los Santos.
That's exactly now. Right. That's exactly right.
Oh, this game's so wild.
I've never played a Grand Theft Auto game, which probably surprises exactly no one. But
single as me a surprise. Aaron, there is nothing about these games that would... No, I take that back. There's a lot about these games that would not interest you.
You might like the music.
Hey,
the music is great, but
throw it on Spotify.
There's so much like gun violence and like... the appreciation of gun
violence
culture in these games, mm-hmm. like the ammunition culture and everything. So if you can look past that, I think that the narrative story here is really intriguing.
Also, it's a video game, which we've come to find out is not something that I genuinely get interested in, unfortunately, anymore these days. I'll go next. I got around to seeing Babes. This is out on VOD, and this is a Pamela Adlon, I think is her name, movie, and I don't know... I don't know if you've really know anybody in this movie. Maybe Hasan Minhaj, who's shown up in a lot of things lately. But it stars Michelle Buteau and Alana Glazer. And I was really captivated by what this movie was saying, how funny and fun it is. It's very modern humor sensibilities. The character of Eden, played by Alana Glazer, is... kind of, I guess I can set up the premise. It doesn't spoil too much. It happens very, very quickly. But she has a kind of meaningful one-night stand with somebody and then finds out the next day some things that have happened, and it just it changes the trajectory of her life. And it's her processing that, dealing with getting older, all those kind of things. I found it humorous, funny, and meaningful. And worth a watch. So if you haven't had a chance to,
I had never even heard of this.
When did this come out? Came out a little bit ago.
That's crazy.
It was this year. It was definitely this year. I think maybe spring. Maybe this was a spring movie this year.
All right.
But I hadn't seen it yet.
All right. Cool.
Yeah, put it on the watch list for sure. I think it's a really fun time.
I like modern comedy.
Looks like you can rent it on Prime.
There you go.
Yes, that's what I said. It's available on VOD. Okay. So.
Okay.
Should be able to rent it at plenty of places. Alice, what do you got?
It's my turn. So have you ever been reading your Grimm's fairy tales and gone, ooh, I want a little bit of Japanese inserted into this? Well, do I have the show for you? So you know how Netflix has been dipping its toe in the anime waters and every now and again they bring something out? So they have recently brought out, and I finally got around to watching it, a show called The Grimm Variations. So just like it sounds, it's essentially six different Grimm Brothers stories. Some are the big popular ones, and then some are actually ones that you might not have heard of before. As someone who back in uni decided to go back and read every single Grimm's fairy tale, it was very nice to see some of the lesser known ones. But essentially, it always starts out with the quote-unquote Grimm brothers and their quote-unquote little sister kind of explaining a story, but then you then see it kind of twisted. So, for example... you know, throughout the show, there might be slight horror elements throughout it. Not in every episode, but in some of them. Like, for example, there's Little Red Riding Hood, except it's set in a futuristic world where these people that live in this extremely rich, but kind of... it's a rich but almost simulated world, so nothing's quite real. And there's these people called wolves, and the way that they want to feel things that are real is they kill people to try and feel the realness of the last, like, moments before they die. And so then he's a wolf for that reason, and then he goes to hunt a Red Riding Hood. And then obviously things ensue. There's also a Cinderella who might or might not be a psychopath. But then there's also a Hansel and Gretel that's kind of also set in a future world and might have a bit of a sci-fi mix to it. So they're all very different, all very interesting. I enjoyed watching every single one of them. None of them are longer than like 49 minutes. And yeah, I also think the animation style is beautiful. The parts where you just see the Grimm brothers, like at the beginning to kind of intro the story, is done in this very like sketch way. And then when you go into the actual story, it's much more kind of, you know, traditional cel shading, but it's again, very beautiful, very unique. And honestly, like you could just pick and choose any of them if the one that you might be more interested in and just kind of go from there, because it's very anthology in that way. But I very much enjoyed it, and I really hope they do more, especially if they delve into some of the other fairy tales that don't quite always get the light of day. So yes, can recommend.
Very interesting. And that's on Netflix, you said?
Yes.
All right. Very interesting. The Grimm Variations, if you want to check that out, that is on Netflix. Babes is available on VOD. Grand Theft Auto 5, The Campaign, part of that, is probably available on multiple platforms.
I would imagine. PS3, 4, and 5. It's been around so long, it's crossed three generations of consoles.
Desperately Seeking Susan is available in a lot of places for free or free with ads. Hoopla,
yeah, you actually watch it on Tubi.
Go see it.
Yeah.
Tubi as well. There you go. So, yeah, check out those things that we've been watching. All right. Let's get into it. Let's do the big dig. Let's talk about It Ends With Us.
Oh, that's my brother, Ryle.
The first official customer.
Well, you'd have to buy something to be considered a customer. Right now, you're just loitering.
We all have an idea of what love can be.
I want to see you again.
Now you see me.
You know what I mean.
That special connection you feel. That first kiss. But 15 seconds. That's all it takes.
Lily overcomes a traumatic childhood to embark on a new life. A chance meeting with neurosurgeon Ryle sparks a connection, but Lily begins to see signs of him that remind her of her parents' relationship. This is based on a very high-selling novel. Told my wife what I was going to see, and she was like, yeah, I read that book. I was like, you and everybody else apparently have read this book.
The Aaron, books are these things. They're paper, and they have word on the page, and then you imagine what happens in them.
I don't believe you. That sounds ridiculous. Who would do that? That sounds silly. So anyhow, Blake Lively is bringing it to the screen. You've also got Jenny Slate in there. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Alice, you first.
I also read the book, and I really liked it.
Really liked it. Jonathan.
I liked it.
Yeah, Jonathan liked it. Andrew?
I will be with Alice, maybe a little bit lower than her, but yeah, really liked it.
All right. Well, I'm going to come in at the lowest probably because I'm on the low side of liked it. So, Alice, I'm going to let you go first. I think that makes the most sense among the four of us to talk about this movie. What are some of your thoughts on It Ends With Us?
Well, I just want to start because apparently it hasn't been super apparent. Well, I know it hasn't been super apparent in the marketing, and this is a movie that requires it. There are themes of domestic violence in this movie, and if you are not okay with that, you shouldn't go see this movie in a cinema. Because I know
not to interrupt, but I feel like that is the type of topic these days that needs like a trigger warning. And I don't watch a lot of marketing commercials or trailers, and my wife had seen some of that and had read the book and was kind of annoyed that they were marketing it seemingly like a rom-com almost. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I only had seen like the poster and a couple other things. And it looked to me more like an emotional Nicholas Sparks style movie where one of the characters gets cancer or something at the end. And it's like a really heavy tearjerker. And obviously this. Yeah, right. And obviously it isn't that, but I went into it thinking a totally different play. And had I not known, or had I, if I was easily upset by stuff like domestic violence, I could see how this movie would be genuinely upsetting to people because they advertised it as something else.
No, I was just going to say, I'm glad you brought that up, Alice. I think it's worth mentioning right at the outset, and I'll probably talk about it a little bit more, but I actually think it harms the movie that the movie itself doesn't realize what kind of a movie it is for a while. I'll be very
interested to talk about that because I have strong opinions on it because but possibly different to yours. But
good. Those are the best kind of opinions. Those are usually the right opinions, Alice.
So and to that point, I think that yes, to your point, John, I think that there's been a lot of mistakes in the marketing as it's been if you're on any form of social media. It's not obviously important regarding the movie's quality itself, but there has been mistakes made in that marketing. And I think the number one mistake is not being more out there with the fact that this is a movie about domestic violence. It is not with romance in it. It is not a romance movie. It is a domestic violence movie. Having said that, I think that and I should also set my own bias at the beginning regarding the story itself. So I read the book and I myself have a past where I have not myself, but I've witnessed domestic violence. So I have a lot of like, I relate to this story a lot. And so when I read the book, I found that very interesting. And then I went into the movie and I found the movie to be in my opinion, needed representation of this kind of story because it chooses to live in shades of gray. So Justin Baldoni, who plays Ryle and also directed this film, you know, he's someone who has been very outspoken about, you know, toxic masculinity and domestic violence in his personal life. And he's very clearly taken that care into this film. And there's been a very clear decision as to how to present it. You know, I feel like, especially in modern media, there's whenever you show this kind of thing, it's always, you know, not to be so overt with it, but a man who's been drinking and like a wife beater, like the singlet,
mustache twirling, like they're literally,
it's
like,
very black and white,
right? Yeah,
it's very black and white. The women are very victimized. It's a very obvious situation. While this movie and this book, and part of the reason, yes, to your point, Aaron, it's a very popular book, but it's also a very controversial book because a lot of people say that it romanticizes domestic violence. I vehemently disagree with that because I think it actually shows the more realistic side of it.
I think it humanizes makes it more realistic, I think, is a better way.
Have you read the book, Jonathan?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. I was confused because I think Alice was talking about the book.
No, but I'm talking the book because I think the movie does it well too, because essentially...
Well, but I think I think there's a distinction, if I'm understanding my wife correctly, because I did talk to her about the book. The book has more sexual content that is violent based that borders on sadomasochism. You know, sexy, is it not? Is it wanted? Is it not? Like, the movie's pretty clear. Any sexual moment in the movie is pretty clearly a terrible situation. But the book isn't necessarily that way. So I think that's the controversy that you're talking about. I'm not trying to agree with one side or the other because I haven't read the book, but I was just trying to, you know, see if I could gather some of what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, again, it's very complex because obviously, because the book, I should also mention, it's from the first person. So you're just reading all of Lily's like thoughts while the movie is showing, which I also appreciated. It's showing a lot of things that you are told in the book. So these moments you're speaking of, I'll tell you this right now. I did not read that and go, ooh, that's sexy. I went, oh my God, get out of there. Get out of there right now. Because the way it's presented, it's confusing. It's hard.
Right, exactly.
And I think that that's the point, because this is a confusing situation, because what this chooses to represent is a relationship that in all other facets, you know, especially the guy Ryle, you know, he's wonderful. He's romantic. He's attractive. He's handsome. He's intelligent. He has a great job. He's great with people, great with kids. But he just has a nasty habit of, you know, being quite violent from time to time. And this is a reality that exists for many, many people. So when people are like, well, why don't you just leave the moment they show this side? It's like, well, you can convince yourself. You look and you choose a different path because it's hard enough to break up with someone when there's no violence in the relationship, let alone when there is these elements of gaslighting, of denial, of intense feelings that as a human being, it's extremely normal to mix that up. And also because I think there is this element of not wanting to be a victim, not wanting to be someone who was, you know, a survivor of domestic violence. And so you convince yourself like, no, that's not me. I'm not like that. Because I think part of the reason is because of how it's been portrayed in media before, where it's like, no, I'm a strong woman. I've got my own business. I have friends. I have all this stuff. Like, I'm not like those kind of people. And I think what I love is the way this movie presents a very beautiful relationship that very quickly turns not to be beautiful, and how it tricks the audience and their own morals, so that when it gets to a certain part of the film, you start being essentially, you have to question the way that you view things. And then it really kind of, I think as well, looks at the way that generational trauma would affect that. And I think helps you look inside into how your own biases and your own experiences would affect how you witness things on camera, on the screen, I should say. I also just want to touch on how I didn't realize you could clone people, because the person that they cast as the young, Blake Lively was literally, even her voice was Blake
Lively. I think they might have done some AI voice trickery there. It was too close to
reference. No. Well, no, but it's also the mole she has is just that's the actor's mole. Like she didn't put one on there, so
that's not a fake mole.
It's not a fake mole.
Get out so of town. I thought for sure that was a prosthetic mole.
The cast
the voice and the mole is her.
Get out of town.
somehow found.
Yeah, she really does have the mole.
Yeah. Really, I'm does. Not lying, guys. But I think that's, yeah, I think that, so we'll get into it, I'm sure, it further. But just to wrap up, I think that it's a very interesting approach. I think it's one that's needed because if nothing else, I think it'll inspire needed conversation. I think the casting was really good, especially with the younger actors. I think like I said before, the adaption of the original novel worked well because there's a lot which is told in the novel and this shows it, which I think is more important. In terms of just quickly some comms, some of the music choices were glaring and extremely distracting. And the wardrobe, if you're on any form of social media, is being made fun of because it's quite ridiculous from time to time. But otherwise, those are literally
the onesies?
Not the onesies.
I was going to say, that's purposefully ridiculous, right?
No. What Lily wears.
Jackets and stuff like that in New York
She
City.
Wears so much camo in this movie. What does she wear?
I was completely clueless to any of that. I thought she looked completely awesome, but
she was also wearing like, if you're someone like, myself and I'm kind of peripherally aware of these things. Some of the shoes and clothing she was wearing was so expensive. And I'm just like, how are you affording all this? And so these are the things that pulled me out of the film, that and the music. Mm. And so I needed to mention them if you're someone like that. It was very like, there were certain music choices which reminded me of all movies of like 50 Shades of Grey, which I'm like, this is not the movie you want to be reminding me of right now. And so I think that those were, especially one in the middle during the young actors scenes. But anyway, that's my little wrap up. I will let somebody else go.
Andrew, why don't you go next? What are some of your general thoughts on It Ends With Us?
Performances, got to give some shout outs here. I think that Blake Lively is really doing some amazing stuff.
I kind of forgot how good of an actress she was because she hasn't been in anything in like 7 years.
Yeah.
Besides like some voice cameos and Ryan Reynolds projects, like this is her first big movie since like 2018.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. Exactly. She's great. She's great.
This and her cameo in Deadpool and Wolverine, those are her two standouts for the year.
For the year.
I think that she is doing some amazing work here alongside Justin Baldoni, who is giving a great subtle it starts off subtle, like you can pick up hints of like who he's going to become, like just the way he, like even in the first encounter between the two of them, he'll be like, he'll be like, tell me about your childhood. And she's like, oh, I don't know. And be like, tell me,
He's really a little aggressive.
Just a little aggressive with the way he's like, tell me,
And I knew, I knew nothing about the story. Again, I thought it was going to be like some sappy sickness third act. So I am not picking up when he's introduced, Justin's character, by throwing a chair across a rooftop because he's just so angry at something happened. And I was like, oh, I didn't even phase me that I'm like, oh, maybe this guy is quick to anger and is, fond of violence. That did not even register.
Well,
and then I'm like
funny,
halfway actually, through the movie before I'm realizing, oh, this guy might not be on the up and up. Like it plays really slow and really subtly.
I should mention this. It's funny because if you read any actual romance novel, these things might also be present, these subtleties, but it's like, oh, he's like hot and strong and blah, blah, blah. But you'd never be into it in real life. Well, this book and this movie are like, no, these are bad things. Be aware of these. These are red flags. And I also appreciated that. But please continue, Andrew.
he's doing great work with his performance, but also I want to give a shout out to him for directing as well, because I think that this is a very well shot, very well. Actually, now that I say it, I do have a little bit of issue with one of the directing choices for this movie, and it's the tempo of having the flashbacks of her youth, her and Atlas's youth.
Mm.
It starts so far into the movie that it was actually kind of jarring for me. Like, wait, are we doing a flashback now?
Yeah, I kind of wish they had just a quick little glimpse of the flashbacks in the first 10 minutes to kind of signal this is the type of movie we're going to do. Because again, we're like 30, 40 minutes in. I'm like, are we doing flashbacks? Is this a Godfather 2 kind of a story? And it's not quite that, but we are quite a ways into the screen time before I realized this is a totally different story than what they were building.
Yeah. Yeah, I personally, just from the movie that I've seen, again, I haven't read the books, I did not get any sense of this movie's trying to glorify or sexualize this type of behavior. Not from the movie that I saw. Again, I haven't read the book. So if it is kind of a 50 Shades type of anything, I could understand that being very controversial. If that's what this type of content is, but that's not, and I don't think that anybody would really want to, in today's society, would want to associate themselves with a movie that had that type of pro.
I think we have thankfully, I think, come quite a bit as a society on this topic in a way that is thankfully very progressive and understanding. And I'm very thankful for that we can talk about it openly on a podcast like this. It's so outside this sort of issue, and that movies like this can make $250 million globally inside of 2 weeks. That deals with such a difficult but important topic. And to your point earlier, Alice, I especially loved, and I believe this was deliberate, but there's a scene in the middle where they're burning some food and Blake Lively kind of gets tossed to the ground in the commotion. And then when it happened, I kind of whispered to my wife, like, did she get hit or did she fall down? Like, I wasn't sure what had actually happened there. And at the end of the movie, you see that scene again in flashback from like a different perspective. And it's more clear, like, oh, he kind of whacked her. It wasn't like he didn't elbow her getting out of the way. He like deliberately whacked her in the face to push her down. And I kind of love the way that this movie played with quick little glimpses of unreliable narration in that respect, where it wasn't just Blake being gaslit. As the audience, we were being shown things that turned out not to be entirely true. And after that scene, in my head, I'm kind of defending him, going like, oh, well, I get it. He burned it. He was upset. I get it. He wasn't trying to hurt his wife. It's totally a misunderstanding. But then by the end of the movie, I was like, oh my gosh, I've been bamboozled. He was violent and he was deliberately hitting his wife. And that sort of emotional ride that I took as if you were going into this story blind, I thought was really effective, because I was kind of, for lack of a better, I was in Blake Lively's shoes. I kind of experienced the same gaslighting that she did. So by the end of the movie, I'm like, you got to dump this guy. Like, this is not healthy. You don't know what else he's going to trick you on. So I really appreciated that sort of narrative journey that the film took, and echo everything else you guys have said about the performances. I thought the cinematography was really sharp. I loved that this took place in Boston, much like the second film we'll talk about tonight, because I grew up around there, and it's good to see home on the big screen.
Andrew, were you all set with your general thoughts?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's my and Jonathan. Those were yours.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought Andrew was done, so I jumped in.
No. You cut me off. Like,
hey, listen.
Right as
I'm here
done.
To direct traffic. Let me direct traffic.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure everybody got in what they wanted to say before I disagreed with everything everybody says. No, it's not that it is strange for me, because I feel many of the things that all of you are saying very strongly as well. I like the, unfortunately, accurately way to say this, shades of gray in this movie. Like, I think there is a real service that can be done by undercutting our assumptions that we make about what movies are doing. I think that that's really good. I think I'm going to start here. I don't think Justin Baldoni's good in this movie. I don't think he portrays this character in a way that brings home the things that this movie, I think, is trying to bring home. I think he, and I don't know that he directs the movie that well either, because I think the movie structurally isn't very sound. I think the things we're dealing with pace whiplash and tonal whiplash and genre whiplash could have been handled better by a better director, a director that knows how to set. It's not, here's what I mean when I say the movie didn't find itself until later in the movie. I don't mean that it turned the story on its head. That part's good. I mean, it doesn't allow the audience to understand what kind of experience they're in for. I don't need them to know the information. I want them to have the same story turn. I felt uneasy because I didn't feel like we had, for about, I don't know, 40 minutes, 45 minutes of this movie, it just felt like, what is this? What am I even, like, watching? And there's something there that was a little off-putting to me. And so that's when I talk about, you know, finding the kind of movie it is. That's more of what I'm saying. Jonathan.
Yeah, well, you talked about, well, I mentioned earlier how it would have been nice to have a flashback early in the movie to kind of set
right.
both the thematic concept of the parallel plots, but also we could have dipped in for a flashback in the first 10 minutes and seen Blake Lively's parents in one of their spousal disagreements to kind of set the stage, like, oh, okay, this movie might deal with violent husbands to a degree. And then we can just kind of see, okay, that's just establishing her home life and her backstory as a kid. Maybe it's relevant, maybe it's not. But then later on when it happens to her boyfriend, it's like, okay, now we're drawing the parallels earlier in the narrative. I think we're eyes open a little bit more. I feel like that might have been a more effective restructuring of the screenplay. But
And I think what Baldoni would say and the producers of the movie would say is that all that is purposeful, that all that yeah. is to undercut the audience as much as possible. And what I'm saying is there's a balance there that I don't think this movie quite attains. Having said that, I love so much about this movie. I do love the idea of I think there are three specific instances. And by the way, we're probably spoiling this movie a little more than we normally would spoil other movies. And apologies.
Hard to talk around some stuff that's kind of important.
But it's just it's important stuff, and I think it's stuff that we need to talk about. So apologies for that. But I think there are three instances in this movie specifically that I can think of that the movie, for lack of a better term, gaslights us on, right? Like says, oh, this could have been all a mistake. This could have been, fine. And those instances, there are two. I think there are two, and the third isn't obvious. So it actually, honestly, if you look at it, the progression is, oh, this could have been fine. It doesn't seem like that was fine, but it could have been fine. And then, oh, that is not fine, right? And
that's exactly what I was saying. Yeah.
I think that is really smart, and I really like that progression for the audience as opposed to a whammy plot twist. This movie is very good about letting the story present itself to most and again I'm talking about the story turns, not the movie structure or itself, but the character turns, to allow it to get to that point of bringing the audience to who this character is. And even by the end, he's not, Snidely Whiplash. You know what I mean? Like the movie has empathy for Ryle from start to finish. And I think that is notable. And my understanding is the book is the same way.
Yeah.
That it's not, oh, this terrible human being mm-hmm. was hidden from you. It's this normal human being who has things that they deal with and that they mistakes that they have made and terrible choices that have direct consequences and harm on others is a struggling human being who has some stuff to deal with. Like that's, you have no idea. Like I'm about, like I can feel the tears welling because of how meaningful that is to me to treat every character with empathy like that. I think that's really, really smart and beautiful. So it's interesting to watch a movie like this where I feel like there's so, and by the way, I haven't talked about Jenny Slate yet. I thought Jenny Slate was so good in this movie. I love her so much.
She's a needed reprieve as a character.
She is. She really is. And adds another complex, nuanced level of
she has one of the best lines in the movie. It's the same line from the book, and I'm so happy that they kept it in because it's honestly one of the most important lines, in my opinion.
And I will say the final conversation between Lily and Ryle that we see is really powerful. And the final scene in the hospital room. I don't want to give too much away other than that. And she says something that is so logically sound and undeniable to him. And
it's devastating.
And it is just heart-wrenching, devastating, and beautiful all at the same time. Now, sounds like this is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I would forgive you for believing so, as much as I love all that stuff. But I just think, man, do I want to see the, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson version of this movie, or the, you know what, I just think there's so much that this movie could have done differently in its structure and in the way that it's telling this story, that could have really elevated it to an all-timer status. And I just think there's a lot holding it back. Even as much as I loved what it was doing and what it was trying to do. Should we talk about Brandon Sklenar? Nobody's really mentioned the Atlas character, which is interesting to me.
Well, something I did like is
he felt a little empty in terms of characterization. We just knew enough about him to be useful in the story, but I didn't get the sense that I knew him as a character.
We almost connected more to his younger version.
Yes.
Yeah.
Than his modern version, and that's hard for the movie to do.
Yeah.
I actually don't mind how he, because again, I'm going to keep saying this because I read the book, so it's hard for me not to constantly refer back to it. But in the book, he's in it a lot more. Like when there's a part where she's with him for a point in time in the movie, and that's a significant portion of the book, and they cut all that out. And I think that was needed because of the fact that because of the book getting the controversies it did around romanticization, I think adding too much of a romance plot, like adding this like romance lead A and romance lead B and making it too overt would have underserved the story, in my opinion, especially for a movie going audience where you only have like 2 and a bit hours to tell the story. They decided to focus on the main story and also her own history with it. And I think that was the better choice, because as much as you want to see more from Atlas, I don't really need to. Like he knows her history. He's the support system. He immediately identifies what's going on and is kind of almost like that trigger point for her to stop being in denial. And yes, Aaron?
I will also say he also has his own little bit of toxic masculinity in this movie too. I don't know if that's in the book as well, but like there's you know, he's not let off the hook for you know, his how his past has impacted, you know,
exactly
his tendency towards violence.
I kind of appreciated that every character in this movie, save for Jenny Slate, who's a saint, we love her, is they all have good and bad aspects. They're very real, lived and authentic.
I mean,
characters.
She's definitely got flaws. Like she's
Even Lily Bloom's character, you talked about that devastating speech in the hospital, Aaron. I also felt at the same time like that was maybe needlessly cruel to drop that at that moment in that. But that's also why it's devastating.
No, I think it was perfect.
It is, but at the same time, it's like,
I don't want to give anything away, but there's a 1-2 punch there of kindness and cruelness. Mm-hmm. That was so like she set him up and took him down. Like it was perfect. I thought it was perfect.
And yeah, no, I think it was,
again, I'm saying these,
needed.
I liked that the characters were complicated and had a little duality. So I liked that about it.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a really important thing to show, because, you know, again, in a lesser movie or a lesser story, it's like, oh, and you'll never see me and, you know, and blah, blah, blah again. But because of certain things that happen, there is a connection that can't be undone, and it's again showing that just because somebody does this and you know, obviously that relationship is broken. That relationship should never ever continue, which is, you know, I'm just going to put it out there. Yeah, if somebody domestically abuses you, that is not something that can be cured or can be fixed or anything like that, because that line has already been crossed. And so that is essentially, I think, what the film is trying, the story tries to say. It's like, once the line is crossed with an individual, then that line is crossed. But there are other relationships, like, for example, the fact that for Jenny Slate and Justin Baldoni, like, they are siblings, and it's not going to be that, you know, Jenny Slate never sees him again. And there's other elements to this relationship that are permanent, and it's like, that's not going to be fractured anytime soon, because it's a permanent part, and there needs to be a continuation of that connection. And that's okay. That can still happen, but with these boundaries in place. And I think it's about, you know, setting boundaries and making sure that you don't cross them, even though that might be the easier thing to do, even though that might be what you want to do at the time, because at the end of the day, it just can't happen, which trying to talk around that, but I hope you guys get what I'm saying.
No, I got you.
Let's do our one last thing. Any final thoughts on It Ends With Us? Let's go Jonathan first.
I don't want to spoil the end of the movie, but it meant a lot to me because my oldest daughter was named after where my wife and I met, which was Emerson College, and we named her Emery. And so that the end of the movie was really special to me too.
Oh, nice. Mr. Ormsby, what's your one last thing?
Oh, I totally forgot, Micah. That was so sweet. No. No post-credit scene should be surprising because unless this is a book series.
There is a sequel.
I was going to say, okay. Setting.
There's a post-credit scene where they get back together and undermine the entire plot.
Next movie, It Doesn't End With Us.
No, the sequel's actually called It Starts With Us, but it's a different story.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
My one last thing is I love the multiple meanings of the title. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
Alice, one last thing.
I also, my mind completely blanked. I had a one last thing and now it's completely gone. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was really
no
nice.
Soup for you. Next.
Yeah. No, Aaron, you go.
Will do. I always appreciate it when a movie knows how to wield its roll credits moment and actually use the movie title at the end right before the credits. Always fun for me. So I smiled when that happened in this one.
Mm-hmm. I remember it now. I'm really sad the restaurant in the movie doesn't actually exist because I'm going to Boston and I wanted to go there, but I can't.
You know what, Alice? I'm sure there are plenty of good restaurants in Boston that you can look up.
And I think that we know maybe one or two people who could possibly recommend.
I'd be happy to give you some recommendations.
But I want one with a tree in the middle of the restaurant.
Truth be told, when I lived in Boston as a college student, I could not afford too many Back Bay restaurants like Root in the movie. That would have been a very expensive place.
Yeah. Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-thru lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. All of this is making me think of other things to say, but we will necessarily move on to let's do the best ever challenge. We haven't talked about the movie Casey Affleck's in yet, but we will get to it. But let's do best ever Casey Affleck movies. We will go round robin. We'll each nominate three, and then we will pick the best Casey Affleck movie ever together. I'll kick us off by nominating Interstellar as the first nomination.
Get an endorsement for you there as well.
Damn it.
You knew.
Let's see. Andrew, what's your first nomination?
Well, I want to make sure this movie gets as much love as possible early on. So I am going to nominate The Assassination of Jesse James by the Howard Robert Ford.
Great movie.
Yeah, good choice.
So you saw it and hated it?
Yeah, I fell asleep like 7 times.
Well, then you can't say
For like a minute, and then I'd go back and rewatch the bit that I missed.
All right, Alice.
I'm going to come out strong with Oppenheimer.
He was definitely in that. Mm-hmm. He and everybody else. Yeah. Jonathan.
Yeah, something I'm noticing looking at his filmography, he's in a lot of ensembles. And I'm sure there's a couple more we'll get to, but my pick to make sure it gets included, one of my all-time top 30 favorites, maybe, Good Will Hunting, another Boston classic. Mm. He has a small but great role in that.
Yeah. Yeah. If it hadn't gotten nominated, John, I just want you to know it wouldn't be your fault. It wouldn't be your fault.
It's not 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 your fault.
All right. So I guess
we're making a mockery of one of the most emotional scenes in film history.
Yeah, honestly, one of the most powerful scenes in cinema.
I have to throw Ocean's 11. Ocean's
11
has to go in there. So I will nominate Ocean's 11.
Yeah. Speaking of ensemble casts, that's another all-timer.
Exactly. Andrew?
You gotta stop stealing all my picks, man. I don't think this has been picked yet. I'm gonna go Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Come on.
I love how Boston focused all of his movies are Boston movies, which I also
I'm running really out take. Of movies.
I am too.
Yeah, famous casino heist in Boston in Ocean's 11.
That one being
Interstellar, Boston space. Mm-hmm. But
oh my goodness, how is that not a parody of Lost in Space?
Boston space. It should be. Should
it's
absolutely
the exact
be.
Same movie, but everybody does Boston accents.
I'm lost now. I think Alice is next. I think Alice is up next.
John, what was the movie you said? Because my brain turned off when you said the title.
I had said Goodwill Hunting.
Goodwill Hunting.
I don't know if I had a, second pick yet.
No, you only said the one. I have one film left, and it was a joke pick. So, American Pie, because he's in American Pie.
He is. He's in American Pie, too.
Apparently. And, I don't remember him in those.
I have one more film I can say because I've seen him in it, but it's not good.
You're going to have to nominate more, so you have to figure this out. Okay. I will admit here and now that for the first time, I just watched all the American Pie movies. And when I say all the American Pie movies, I mean all the American Pie, all seven of them.
You can't skip Naked Mile.
No, you cannot. You cannot. And I have to tell you, Casey Affleck showing up was hilarious to me. He is the one in American Pie that is the older brother that lets them in on the book of sex or whatever that's in the library. And so he shows up in American Pie 2 on a phone call as well. The other person who's wild to see in there is it's Cal Penn. Who is it that's basically invented the word MILF in that movie?
I'm not contributing. Sorry,
I know, and I'm. I'm not contributing to this. It is just to make sure we get this right because I know it was wrong.
John Cho.
Yeah, it's John Cho.
Yeah, hey, so not Harold. Harold, not Kumar.
I had the wrong Harold and Kumar person. So I am well aware of who Casey Affleck was in the American Pie movies. Jonathan, time for your second nomination.
So we did mention Gone Baby Gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll grab Manchester by the Sea, film he won the Oscar for. I mean, that's a devastating movie. There's not a ray of hope anywhere in that film. It's just depressing. But he's great in it.
I will allow people to cede their nominations if they really haven't seen anything else. That is fine. Let's see. So I think is it back to me?
Yeah. For your third and final one?
my third and final nomination. I actually have several left that I'd love to see in here. I'm going to go with, I have to go with a ghost story. I have to get a ghost story in here. A ghost story is a phenomenal film.
Have not seen it yet, but I've heard good things.
Don't go into it expecting anything exciting. It's not an exciting movie. Like, you're in for a tone poem, and those can be, depending on what kind of day you're having, what you're in the mood for, those can be terrible experiences. Yeah, I know that, but man, it hit me in a lot of, you know, great places. I loved what I felt like this movie was trying to say. So a ghost story is worth checking out. Let's see. Andrew, got a third nom?
Yeah, I found it. Let's go with a movie that I am so meh on, but it's all I got left. I'm going to go with The Last Kiss, starring Zach Braff, Rachel Bilson, and Casey Affleck.
I actually haven't seen that one.
It's an interesting film about a guy in his 30s going through an early midlife crisis with everything in his life getting dumped on him, like
that sounds
marriage,
like a Zach Braff movie.
Baby.
Yeah, that sounds like
exactly.
A Zach Braff
movie. It's a Zach Braff movie. Yeah. It's not quite as good as Garden State, a movie which I actually love. But if you enjoyed Garden State, you might find something here that intrigues you enough to watch it.
There you go. Alice, do you want to have a third nomination, or do you want to let somebody else do it?
No, I have another film of his I've seen. It's just not a good movie, but I'll nominate it. It's the film stars Eddie Murphy, Ben Stiller, Casey Affleck, Alan Alda, Matthew Broderick, Judd Hirsch, Michael Peña, Gadbury Sidibe, and Taya Leone. And it is, of course, Tower Heist, the stupid car film.
What an incredible cast, incredibly wasted. Just such a kind of a nothing burger of an experience.
It's directed by a bad guy.
Cast, like,
it's not a good
run film. Am I allowed to nominate?
I literally haven't seen any other film with Casey Affleck.
Well, I've got some suggestions for you for the honorable mentions then here in a bit. Jonathan, finish this off. What is the final nomination?
Am I allowed to nominate the Instigators, which we are about to talk about?
I'm gonna veto that just because it's generally been a rule that we don't include the movie we're talking about on the list.
I'll go with Chasing Amy, which is an earlier Kevin Smith movie that has a lot of charm. I think one of his more accessible romantic kind of slanted films. I think it's probably the only movie in Kevin Smith's catalog ladies might enjoy, because everything else is a little too nerd centric and gross out humor to really.
Hey, ladies enjoy all kinds of films. Thank you.
That's right. Don't you put baby in a corner.
I mean, I don't know.
All right. So there are the 12 nominees. Before we pick our number one, we've got a couple other things to do. Andrew, did you throw it out to the SifPop gurus to see what they would say?
Surely did. Coming in at number three, we have Good Will Hunting. Number two, Gone Baby Gone. And number one, Oppenheimer.
That makes sense. That sounds like the SifPop crew. All right, I'm going to throw out a couple honorable mentions. These are not eligible as they were not nominated, but I actually recommend these movies. I'm not just throwing them out because Casey Affleck was in them. I actually think these are good movies, and I have a bunch of them. It is wild to me that these were not mentioned. Triple Nine.
Oh.
Actually like that movie. Finest Hours. That's a good movie.
I've actually really wanted to see that one, and I've never heard a single person mention it ever.
Well, now you have. Hold on just a second. Yeah, Triple Nine's the one I was thinking of. Your reaction, Andrew, gave me pause. I think you didn't think Triple Nine was that good.
It was one of those things where, like, I saw the trailer for that movie and I was like, this is going to be the greatest movie of all time. And I would just
want to let you down. Yeah.
Hyped up that it just totally let me down. Yeah.
Really an incredible movie with him and Dakota Johnson and Jason Segel. Our Friend. Did none of you see Our Friend?
Nope.
Okay, that's another one to get on your list. A movie he did with Christian Bale called Out of the Furnace, also a good watch.
That's the one that has a... Who else is in that movie?
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, Zoe Saldana.
Not a bad film.
I agree. I mean, not as good as Tower Heist, but, you know, it's still really good. let's see. To Die For. Nobody mentioned To Die For. He shows up in Nicole Kidman movie To Die For. And then the other one I have to mention is Paranorman. He does a voice in Paranorman, which I thought was really good as well. So there's a whole bunch to put on your list if you want to kind
of. A bunch of those I haven't seen, and the ones I have, I didn't really like. But 999 and Our Friend, I think I will check out. So thank you for the recs.
Yeah. Yeah. Check it out. There you go. Now all we have to do is pick the number one. Not as easy as it might seem. There are a lot of good ones on here. So, I mean, Jonathan, you seem to think it's going to be easy. So what do you think the easy choice is?
For me, it's Good Will Hunting or Interstellar. And
okay. Interstellar! Yes! I love Interstellar.
I mean, I know a lot of people love Oppenheimer, but for me, it's still many leagues beneath
Watchability-wise, I would watch Interstellar like six or seven times out of ten.
Interstellar is such a much better film, and I'm tired of trying to suggest otherwise.
I'm tired of pretending otherwise.
They're both fantastic, but Interstellar for me is Nolan's best film by a... In my opinion,
I love Interstellar so much.
I mean, it sounds like you guys are set on Interstellar, so I'm not going to argue you guys out of that, I don't think. But I will say, I'm just trying to
I'm curious what you would have gone with, Aaron.
Well, I was trying to look at my list, but without cross-referencing my list, I think I have three movies I like more than Interstellar on this list.
That Casey Affleck has been in?
Yes. Gone, Baby Gone.
Wow.
Ocean's 11 and Oppenheimer. I think all of those movies are better than Interstellar. I could be wrong about my list, but as I'm thinking about it right now, I think they're all at least in that conversation with Interstellar for me. Like, especially Ocean's 11. Ocean's 11 is a perfect movie.
I feel like people don't give that one enough praise. And again, that seems silly to say, but.
It's okay.
Alice is one of the ones that doesn't give me enough praise.
I watched it last year for the first time, and I was like, "Yeah, it's good."
that is not an appropriate response to that movie. We will move on. Damage our friendship.
Soderbergh cooked with that film. That movie is fantastic.
I prefer Logan Lucky, but that's okay.
All right,
okay. Logan Lucky is great. Hey, Logan Lucky is great. So I'm not.
If we're talking Soderbergh heists, I haven't seen 12 or 13 yet, so I'll wait.
Yeah,
I actually like 12 a lot.
12 and 13 are fine, but they're not 11.
No.
And nobody even talks about the first 10. So
I think like
other than maybe 8.
Yeah, because when it came out, it was like I was like 6, so I didn't see it. And so then I watched it last year because I was like, oh, I should catch up on these. But I've seen so many heist movies in my time that I'm like, you know, especially because like the first Ocean's film I saw was Ocean's 8, which obviously had a lot of callbacks to Ocean's 11. So I'm just mentioning my biases here.
I feel like the 11 remake in 2001 was sort of the renaissance, the resurgence of the heist movie. And Italian Job came out right after that. And I think we had the movie The Score the same year. And Entrapment came out around the same time. And 11 did it better than all of
those. What's the Catherine Zeta-Jones one? That was everywhere when it came out.
Yeah. Ocean's 11 is like a top probably 50 movie for me. Good Will Hunting's top 30. But Interstellar's like top 20. So that's my
pick. I love Interstellar. All right.
I have no problem with Interstellar being the choice. Interstellar is, according to SifPop, the best ever Casey Affleck movie.
No,
It will be Interstellar.
If we ever do like a best ever score, have we? Has there been a best ever challenge, best ever score? Because, what a category that would be.
Coming up on its 10-year anniversary, actually, just a month away now.
Which 12 John Williams scores will be the nominees for best ever?
Except
score?
I literally was like, Interstellar would definitely be Hans Zimmer. It'd be Hans Zimmer versus John Williams.
I don't know, man. There's so many iconic, like Star Wars, Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones.
I think any Close conversation Encounters. About film scores, you almost have to handicap Williams as his own category, and then everybody else.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Best William scores and then best everybody else
Morricone
scores.
Is who I'd go with.
Yeah. Morricone and Jerry Goldsmith and Michael Giacchino and Hans Zimmer.
I was going to say Michael Giacchino is my go-to now. Like, he just keeps making incredible stuff. Well, there you go. And it's only appropriate that Alice would mention heist movies, as we are going to talk about a heist movie with two of the members of the Ocean's 11.
Do you think they just like to rob things?
So let's chat Ocean's about two. It is our final artifact. Let's talk about the instigators.
Rory, do you want to fix things with your son?
Couldn't look him in the eye. Mortgage, back child support, that's on me.
Rory, are you sure you've tried everything?
Not everything.
Give me the loot. I got a once in a lifetime score. You're talking to the robbery expert. You're the Marine?
Yeah.
You the ex-con?
Yeah, I did time, but you only gotta cast aspersions at me, guys.
I'm trying!
Good, stop talking.
No alcohol detected.
Rory and Cobby are unlikely partners thrown together for a heist, but when it goes awry, they learn to outrun police, backward bureaucrats, and a vengeful crime boss. Instigators, Apple TV Plus, you know, got the usual couple theaters, throw it in there and then put it on Apple TV Plus. I think originally Apple was thinking of doing a bigger release with this, but for some reason changed their minds. As we mentioned, Matt Damon and Casey Affleck starring here. What did you guys think? Oh, and I should mention Doug Liman, by the way, directing this, which I think is important to mention. But what'd you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Alice, what do you think?
I liked it.
Alice liked it. Jonathan?
I really liked it. Losida loved it, even.
Ooh, all right. Sneaking into the loved it category. Andrew?
It's okay.
Ooh, just okay from Andrew. I am firmly in the liked it. I liked this movie as well. Jonathan, you have it sneaking into possibly the lower side of the loved it. So what are your general thoughts on the instigators?
I mean, first and foremost, we get a proper two-hander with the Ocean's 2 here. They've done a bunch of movies together, Good Will Hunting, and they were in Interstellar together, and they're in this together, and Ocean's 1, 2, and 3, or 11, 12, and 13. So it's great to see them back together, but just with each other, not with a bigger ensemble where they can really kind of mix it up with each other. And there's so much good, witty, kind of clever Bostonian humor and dialogue in this. Some of the combinations of dialogue and situations and this sort of black comedy take on violence and crime felt almost like the Coen brothers. Like, there's a scene where a house explodes and a guy kind of plays it off like a joke. And I feel like that – I feel like I would have seen that in, like, Fargo or something. Like, this feels very Coen brothers-esque. And I thought, for me, the humor really, really worked. There's an excellent car chase sequence where they're going down Storrow Drive and then over the Charles River. And throughout the entire sequence, they're in the middle of what is ostensibly a therapy session. And my wife and I were cackling throughout this whole thing because it is the kind – if you're from Boston, if you know these types of people, I'm just picturing everybody I know that would actually absolutely be like this and act like this and be just sort of sardonic and sarcastic while in the middle of a car chase and not worry at the same time. So I love that. It was just such a fun cocktail of different styles that we don't usually see, at least not with these characters. And Matt Damon's one of my all-time favorite actors. I don't know that he's one of the best actors, but he's very accessible and he always picks fun projects and I always enjoy whatever he's in. So this, I was sold before I started it, but by the end I was like, yes, I want more of these, please.
Nice. Alice, some general thoughts.
I think it was an easy, inoffensive watch. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't, you know, I finished it and I was like, will I ever watch it again? Probably not. Because I just feel like the whole movie, I enjoyed the concept, but I just felt the whole thing was a little undercooked. like, it had a lot of good ideas that never quite reached its potential. I agree with you, John. Like, I enjoyed the sardonic nature. I enjoyed the quips. I just, for some reason, and I don't know why, but the chemistry between Casey Affleck and Matt Damon just wasn't chemistrying for me. Ironically enough, though, I thought the chemistry between Hong Chau and both actors was working really well.
Yeah, right.
So
she
that
was the
bit,
glue
I thought,
that kind of held this all together.
She worked really well, but for some reason, for people that I think essentially have in real life grown up together, I was like, I thought there would be a lot more rapport, repartee. I'd be feeling a lot more, and I just was like, eh, every time they were, it just felt like they were swapping lines rather than like, you know, it didn't feel natural. But it still, yeah, it had some funny moments. I also felt a little bit left down by Ron Perlman's villain Mayer. I thought he was a bit mustache twirly, and I just wanted, it's Ron Perlman, so I wanted more. I wanted there to be a like more interesting element to his character, rather than if everyone felt kind of almost cliche again, except for the Hong Chau character and her interest and her insert into this film. So I think it was just, yeah, like it was fine overall.
But you did say you liked it, right? I just want to clear. Okay,
yeah,
because
easy.
That sounded like an it's okay to me.
No. Like it was an easy, inoffensive one. This is what I mean. Like it was, I liked
you
it.
You had fun? You had fun?
I had fun enough. Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't like bored or any, like I was. It's
you are
hard
not
to
selling the liked it on this, Alice. Like this
no,
is
I
this
can't.
Is I can maybe
I
give
human.
You low side of liked it, but I don't believe that you actually liked this movie.
I was gonna no. Okay, look, I'm a human. We can contain multitudes.
That's
I enjoyed
true.
It. Like I said, I enjoyed everything that happened in the film. It just felt undercooked. This is what
okay.
I'm saying. Like
fair.
I just wanted more from everything.
Sure.
That's
sure.
why I'm in liked it. Probably you're right. Probably more between. I wouldn't say like fully low side of liked it, but I'm like in between low side and liked it. I'm like
okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if Alice liked this movie, I think it's the best movie ever made. No, I also liked this movie. I think there is some really fun casting in this movie. Mm. Now, I agree that Ron Perlman doesn't exactly work, and without getting too into the political nature of things, there is an imitation quality that I feel like a lot of political villains are doing now that the real world is messing with. When I I say that, like the stories the real world is writing can't be satirized. Like it's and so it's almost hard to balance that, and I do not think this movie succeeds with the Ron Perlman character. Having said that, I have never seen Michael Stuhlbarg do this before,
and I
thought it was so much fun.
Him and Alfred Molina felt like a little.
Yes.
They were all, I love their little side adventure. Like I want to see a buddy cop movie or buddy movie with just those guys in the woods hanging out, running from the law in Canada. Like Molina and Stuhlbarg were so fun.
Toby Jones stepping in for some fun. Like he had some moments that made me laugh, some lines that made
Ving
me
Rhames.
Laugh. Ving Rhames in there as well. So yeah, so there's some really interesting casting here. And I love Paul Walter Hauser, man. I just there's something about that dude that I just really like all the stuff that I see him in. I thought that was one of the funniest scenes at the beach house with him and the two guys. Here's where I might get a little bit controversial. And the reason I can't say like I loved this movie or even high side liked it, I don't know if you're ready for this. I don't know if everybody's ready for this. I think Matt Damon is bad in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually not disagree.
I was surprised by how lifeless that performance was. And I think what he's trying to do in many ways is be the straight man and be the down to earth foundational part of what's going on. The problem is Casey Affleck almost does that too well. Like they're both kind of doing that in some ways. Now Casey Affleck is the more sarcastic, sardonic, witty one, but he's still playing that role of straight man. You know what
I'm
saying?
He's like, very his emotions are very below the surface. He's like, oh wow, look, another car, and he's. It's interesting you mention that because I saw either in an interview or a TikTok or something. That they really wanted to borrow the sensibility of Midnight Run, that great comedy with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin.
Midnight Run is great.
Great film, underseen classic from the 80s. And it's obvious that Damon's trying to go for that like Charles Grodin bit where he's just like put upon and annoyed the whole time. But a lot of times I was kind of like, he's Matt Damon. You got to let him be Matt Damon. He's like, he's such a, you know, charismatic and fun guy. And this movie, I'm like, I don't even – get like a hint of that like Boston boyish charm that he's so known for.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing I forgot to mention it because I was too busy effusing praise on it. But yeah,
I think it's the reason the chemistry doesn't work. As mentioned before, I think Casey Affleck is acting circles around Matt Damon in this movie. I loved the Casey Affleck character so much. And the Matt Damon character just didn't serve much of a purpose for me. I didn't understand the place that their relationship was supposed to come from never gelled for me. Like, cause they're just acquaintances at the beginning of the movie. Right. Mm. So there's no backstory or real like connection or feeling that they have been, you know, jabbing at each other their whole lives, like brothers.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like they just met and I don't know. And maybe that's what the movie's supposed to be about, is them becoming friends. I guess that's a possible take, but I don't think it works either, though.
I feel like, yeah, now that you've articulated it, it seems obvious. They should have just made them be like, you're the little brother of my best friend. Literally wink to the audience like, little brother of my best friend.
Well, I was waiting for a Ben Affleck cameo, I'm not going to lie, because Casey Affleck kept mentioning his older brother over and over again. And then, I mean, obviously there was a different situation in that case, but I was like, we're not gonna see that. I think the thing is as well, it's like, I think that if you had swapped out either actor with Ben Affleck as like a straight man, it would have worked better. Like, I just think that I think that Matt Damon didn't know what to do with the character potentially, because he's kind of like almost meant to be a fish out of water, like, I've just ended up in this situation. But I think to that point, it never fully tells you, like, not tells you, but I don't really get why he's ended up in this situation. He has a psychiatrist,
right?
And then he's gonna rob stuff, like, it's, you know,
and okay, that stuff just never justifies itself. It just never feels like that stuff is meaningful.
So what do you attribute that to?
Your general thoughts?
Oh yeah,
I don't know what this movie wants to be.
Yeah,
does it want to be a silly buddy heist movie? Because it's not that funny. You know,
I disagree with that. I do think it's funny.
I thought it was
on.
Very
it's funny.
It's not ha ha funny. It's funny.
I have paused the movie. I was laughing very hard.
Speak your truth. Speak your truth, Andrew. Speak your truth.
Does it want to be a father will do whatever it takes to try and make right by his family? Because this is a horrible way to go about telling that message, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie should not be pro-crime, as the thing that Aaron really dislikes about mafia movies. You know, most of them are pro-crime. This movie felt more pro-crime to me than any, like, Goodfellow movie I've ever seen or anything like that.
Really? I'm willing to have that conversation.
Bureaucratical crime.
What I can say about that real quick is I think that this movie is pro-crime in a way that the Goodfellas aren't, is because, man, this is kind of spoiler-ish.
I don't think crime ever looks like the hero in this movie.
I think it looks more like the hero than it does in like Goodfellas, because of ramifications you see in like the Goodfellow movies and like any mafia movie I can think of is saying, hey, you can live this crazy wild life, but there are consequences down the road, and those consequences are what are going to get you. That's what I take away from mafia movies. This one, I've never really got the sense of those consequences down the road, because
it played a little too unseriously for that to ever stick.
Yeah.
Well, because I think this movie is basically portraying criminals as idiots. Like, I think that's what the movie is.
Everybody's
is kind
a criminal
of about,
and
is,
everybody's an idiot.
Everybody's a moron. I don't think there's the movie is taking crime seriously in that way.
But don't you think that there's a rather serious underlying message here, that the father, the Matt Damon character, like, there's an underlying message with that character's motivations and everything that this movie does try and take seriously?
Well, like Alice said, that was a little undercooked.
That's what I'm saying. No, because it's barely in the movie and it doesn't make any sense. Like, it never really sets itself up. I guess since you mentioned my, you know, stance on Goodfellas and crime movies and mafia movies, that kind of thing. The difference for me is There is not a moment in this movie where I think the intended audience reaction is, oh, that was cool when they did that crime thing. You know what I mean? Like it's none of these criminals look cool or attractive or, you know, that's the life I want.
I reckon there's one bit in the yellow house where I was like, oh, that was cool.
Well, like I said, this reminded me more of the Coen brothers than anybody. This was not Scorsese or Tarantino. Right. This was Coen brothers.
Exactly.
Like it's a comedy of errors where they fall ass backwards into an escape plan. Well, like they didn't plan it.
I think a better version of this, because I just watched it for the first time on the weekend, is like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where it's like these bumbling criminals end up doing a bunch of stuff, and some of it's good and some of it's bad, and they end up in this situation, and then at the end they kind of, you know, not to spoiler or anything, but there's an element of being resolved kind of out of their hands, but also due to their actions and also corruption. So
totally.
Continue, Andrew.
Sorry. I was intrigued by the story. Like, I think that Doug, is it Lyman or Lehman?
I think it's Lyman.
Doug Lyman. I think that he has the tempo set perfectly in this movie, because it gradually progresses along the way. And I was intrigued the entire time. The entire time I'm like, okay, things are going to go wrong. How are they going to get out of this? And how they fumble through this entire heist with back set after back set, and it's just a really fun ride. I enjoyed myself, so that's why I can't say I don't like the movie, because I think the messaging is muddled. I think that the movie doesn't really know what it wants to be, but it was a good time. It's not going to be anywhere for my high Doug Lyman movies. It's not going to be like Edge of Tomorrow or anything like that. It's going to be, you know, right in the middle. It's okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What else? Jonathan, you were starting to ask a question, I think, and I interrupted you. Was there, do you remember what that was? Yeah. Do you want to get back to that, or should we go? What was it?
Yeah. Do you all attribute Matt Damon's aloofness to a personal decision from him as a performer, Lyman's direction, or the script? Because I'm actually not sure if this was on the page. I think it was on the page like this. I don't think
because
it's Damon or Lehman.
His character has certain scripted actions where I was like even his introduction, you know, there's this bit, and this is in the first like couple of minutes of the film. So, but he's talking to a psychiatrist and she's like, so what happened? Blah, blah, blah. And he's like, oh, I can't talk about it. No, don't worry about it. I can't talk about it. And I'm waiting the whole time for this big, like, what happened? We'll never know. Things happened. And like, and I think even there's bits where during the heist planning, he's like taking notes because he's so out of his depth. So I just think that it's in the script. And I just don't think that Matt Damon was the character to play that role.
Yeah. No, I agree with all that, actually.
I think they got Matt Damon because it's Boston. But, and it's, you know.
Oh, it's frustrating. Like, I think his character isn't from Boston. Which is a bizarre.
He has a Boston accent. I didn't know if that was just Matt Damon's Boston accent.
I think his character is supposed to be from somewhere else, like Jersey or Michigan or something, right? Maybe
Jonathan definitely does the stuff. So,
Jonathan, what did you think of Mark Stahlberg's accent? Because I thought it was kind of iffy. But then again, I'm not from.
Oh yeah, you mean Stuhlbarg?
So I wanted your. Yeah,
Stuhlbarg was. It was okay. It's so hard to do a Boston accent if you're not from here, because you just screw it up and you go too hot into it, and then it just sounds like you're doing an affectation. And the only people that have ever done a good Boston accent are people from Boston, and everyone else should just avoid it altogether. Stuhlbarg was close, but I was like, yeah, this kind of sounds like someone English doing an American accent. Like you could tell this like a little bit. It's like 15% off, and it's just enough to trigger.
What are you saying, Jonathan? You think you're better than me? You think you're better than me, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think I'm better than you. Yeah. How do you like them apples?
This isn't the DePatted.
Yeah, it sounds like that. It sounds put upon. It doesn't sound real.
You don't think I sound like Mark Wahlberg? What do you think is going on?
No.
Say hi to your mother for me.
You sound like New York.
You sound like Gilbert Gottfried with a cold.
That's, I've heard that before. I've heard that's generally what people say.
I literally have a call.
Let's do one last thing. I'll start with my one last thing, which is I laughed so much in this movie and I don't know what Andrew's talking about. That's my one last thing. I think there's some really good jokes in this movie, and I think you will have a good time. So that's my one last thing. Jonathan, what's yours?
Yeah, so I grew up in Nahant, Mass, and that's an island off the coast of Boston. And the only way in and out is over a two-mile causeway off the peninsula. And I have to go through Lynn, Massachusetts anytime you need to get gas, groceries, go to school, anywhere. So I effectively lived in Lynn or all on the outside of Lynn. And there's a mention of dialogue in this where the Casey Affleck is talking to Hong Chau's character about being a therapist. She's like, well, yeah, where are you from? Lynn? Yeah, that makes sense. And I just laughed so hard because it's absolutely like a characterization of like everyone I know from where I grew up. So I would say if you're from the North Shore, if you're from Boston, if you know people from Boston, I think there's a lot of kind of, I wouldn't even call it like inside humor, but you're going to like appreciate a little more of this than if you didn't. And I like, for example, a great thing I loved is they go down Storrow Drive south, take a right over the Charles River, and then go back up north on Memorial Drive. I'm like, that's geographically correct. They're going the right way. I kind of love that it wasn't just like, let's just get landmarks and buildings. They actually like, no, that's, you just made a big circle back into the 93. I kind of like that. They paid some attention. And I'm sure having, Casey work on the script is a big reason why it felt authentic. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. Andrew, one last thing.
If you want to know what happens to certain characters, wait for the mid-credit scene.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
there's a mid-credit scene?
There is a mid-credit scene, yes.
You have to go watch one. That after this.
Uh-huh. Yep. Alice, one final thing.
Well, it's funny because you changed the intro last week and had Vault from a vault, and you were like, oh, I've got to change it back this week. You could have kept it the same.
I could have definitely, yes. Yeah. Definitely could have stayed in the Vault theme this week for sure. All hearts clear on the instigators. Everybody feel like they said everything they needed to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love good conversation.
I love that they had the needle drop at the very end of Thunderclap Newman's Something in the Air, which the whole time I saw this in my feed and then I put it on, I just kept call out the instigator. I just kept having that stupid line from that song in my head the whole movie. And they finally needle dropped it. I'm like, oh, good. Now I can get it out of my head.
I thought the needle drops in this movie were great. I really loved the music cues. I thought there were some good ones in there. Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast. Yeah, congratulations. Four people can come together and do right in the world. And you were part of something special today. Something very, very special. Thanks so much for joining us for Sif Pop today. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you to Jonathan Paula for hanging out with us today. Jonathan, where do you want to send people?
You can head over to my YouTube channel. I'm planning a big franchise review and ranking of all 7 Aliens films. How many are there? I don't know. All of them. 7 or 8. Alien
Predator. Depends on whether you count the Alien versus Predator as canonical films or not.
Why not? Let's throw them in there. So that'll be coming out sometime in September on youtube.com/jogwheel. So keep an eye out for that.
Nice. Alice, nice. Thank you for joining us today as well. Where do you want people to go?
Well, as always, I'm a writer for SifPop.com, and I also wrote the review for It Ends With Us. So nice. You can go read my in-depth thoughts there. Otherwise, as always, Instagram and Letterboxd at Ali G Mick, M-I-C-H, or Mitch, if you can't pronounce it.
Much love and gratitude to our SifPop members as well. Thank you guys for making SifPop a real thing. We really do appreciate you. If you want to check all that out, it's at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. or you can email us, feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than smelling when someone cut the gas line. We'll be back next week with the Summer Sum Game results. Ooh. Everybody will be here to talk about who were the surprises, who were the big winners, who were the big losers. We will see you guys then and discuss it all. Thanks for tuning in. Love you all. Bye.
Can't wait. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.